You know, when you bought a video game like 20 years ago, you were basically buying a fixed point in time.
Oh, absolutely. It was completely static.
Right. It was like buying a printed map of a city. You know, the
Yeah.
roads, the architecture, the boundaries, they were all just baked right onto the disk.
Yeah, it was reliable. You always knew what you were getting.
Exactly. But today, jumping into the modern gaming landscape, it feels less like reading a map and more like, well, trying to build a house on shifting tectonic plates.
That is a very good way to put it. The ground is constantly moving.
It is. And the rules of the world can just be rewritten overnight. So for today's deep dive, we are jumping into the April 2026 edition of iGaming by LODG Magazine to figure out exactly who is controlling those tectonic plates.
Right, and how they're manipulating the environments we play in.
Yeah, and what actually happens when the ground suddenly opens up and swallows your favorite game whole? Our mission today is to explore those invisible forces shaping the games you play, from how stories are being told and, frankly, how games are being sold, to the fierce battle over who actually gets to preserve gaming history.
It really is a phenomenal issue to unpack, largely because we are witnessing this complete metamorphosis of the medium right now.
We really are. We've got Hollywood leaking into video games, rumors of Kratos' next potential victim, and this tragic shutdown of a massive fan server.
Yeah, we are moving away from passive consumption entirely. We're seeing a massive shift in how players interact with living digital worlds, how hardware physically dictates artistic vision, and like you mentioned, the immense legal friction that happens when passionate fan communities just collide head-on with corporate IP.
It's a lot to cover. And to start, we have to look at the studio that essentially wrote the playbook on shifting digital landscapes. Okay, let's unpack this latest update with Fortnite Chapter 7 Season 2.
Well, this is a massive one.
It is. If you haven't been paying attention to Fortnite lately, I mean, this is no longer just a battle royale where 100 people drop onto an island to crank 90s and shoot each other.
Not at all. They've completely abandoned that traditional static seasonal update model.
Right, because the mid-game has turned into this absolute narrative war zone driven by these new, highly aggressive NPC factions. It's almost like a hit HBO television series at this point.
Yeah, what Epic Games has adopted is a serialized environmental narrative structure. They break the narrative into these distinct cinematic acts.
I have to ask, like, is it really a narrative? Or is it just a chaotic spectacle designed to create artificial FOMO for the players?
How do you mean?
Well, dropping a massive new boss that just completely levels a beloved familiar location, it feels less like storytelling and more like, I don't know, just shaking the Etch-a-Sketch to keep us addicted to the changes.
Well, what's fascinating here is the underlying mechanism of how they are delivering those changes. I mean, if this were a standard game, the developers would force a massive patch download, right?
Yeah, they take the servers offline for like 6 hours.
Exactly. And you'd log back in to see a new map. Or they would just freeze your gameplay to show you a pre-rendered cutscene. But Epic is doing something far more sophisticated here.
Right, the environmental storytelling.
Yes. They are utilizing dynamic asset streaming and background instance swapping.
Wait, so they are literally changing the geometry
Yeah.
of the map while millions of people are actively running around on it?
Precisely. It's wild. They preload these encrypted, altered states of the map onto your local hardware during routine background updates.
Oh, wow.
And then, triggered by a server-side command, they just swap the active instances in real time. So you might be running from the storm, and suddenly the server tells your client to render a massive dimensional rift tearing the sky open.
Just right above you?
Yeah. Or a localized earthquake reshaping the terrain right beneath your character's feet. The environment is acting upon the player just as much as the player is acting upon the environment.
That is insane.
The map is not a board anymore, you know? It is the primary protagonist of the story.
Which means, for you listening, if you were just grinding ranked mode and ignoring the story quests, you are missing out on some of the best world building in gaming right now.
Oh, absolutely.
So if you're dropping onto the island today, watch your back. That NPC faction you thought was your buddy last season, they might have dynamically shifted allegiances based on themes of betrayal in the server's current narrative state.
Yeah, they will end your run without a second thought.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Now, Epic has mastered these seamless changes on the back end week by week, but that requires an incredibly smooth user interface to actually navigate. Which brings us perfectly to how Sony is trying to remove the friction from our digital lives with the PlayStation 5 Store facelift.
Right, a completely different kind of shifting landscape, but one that is arguably more vital to the actual health of the industry.
Look, We can all agree the old PS5 store interface was just a labyrinth.
A labyrinth of clunky menus, yeah.
Exactly. You would boot up the console just wanting to find a specific indie game sale, and suddenly you're drowning in slow-loading promotional tiles and endless scrolling. Now, Sony has finally dropped this massive new UI update, and iGaming praises the cleaner wish lists and better discovery.
It is a much-needed overhaul.
But I gotta playfully push back on this a bit. Is this update actually for the players, or is Sony just making it dangerously easy for us to spend our money?
Well, it's a bit of both, naturally. But as digital catalogs grow, UI really is the make or break point for indie game discovery.
But does a streamlined algorithm actually help indies? It feels like an engagement trap. Right. Like if it just looks at the data, sees the AAA blockbusters sell best, and shoves those in front of everyone, the rich just get richer.
That is a very valid concern. It's what UI designers call the Netflix scrolling problem, but applied to a $60 entry fee.
Right.
But Sony's back-end approach here attempts to mitigate that feedback loop. They are shifting from top-down popularity metrics to lateral tag-based curation.
How does that actually work in practice, though? Like for the average player.
So in the old labyrinth, visibility was purely promotional. You saw what Sony's marketing team manually pinned to the front page.
Which was usually just the newest massive shooter.
Exactly. But the new architecture utilizes relational databases. If you, the user, spend 40 hours playing a niche pixel art roguelike, the store's backend now actively cross-references the metadata tags of that specific game against hundreds of indie titles released that month.
Oh, so it looks at the specific mechanics and art style.
Right, mechanics, art style, even the developer. By removing those manual search menus, the store surfaces lateral recommendations right onto your dashboard. It isn't just trying to sell you the next blockbuster, it's matching your specific behavioral data with relevant smaller titles that would have otherwise just disappeared.
Okay, so it's less of a billboard and more of a highly tailored concierge service, which means if you're a gamer tired of getting lost trying to find a specific sale, this sleek upgrade actually respects your time.
It really does.
It cuts through the choice paralysis. But connecting this to the bigger picture, Sony needs this storefront operating flawlessly for a very specific reason, right?
Yes. They are preparing the PlayStation ecosystem for a massive wave of next-generation cinematic blockbusters. The sheer file sizes and ambitions of their upcoming exclusives are astronomical, so the pipeline from discovery to purchase has to be completely frictionless.
And speaking of cinematic blockbusters, here's where it gets really interesting. Because one legendary creator is about to blur the line between movies and games completely.
You're talking about the Hideo Kojima leak.
Yes, the massive cast leak for his upcoming action espionage game, Pheasant. According to iGaming, this is a spiritual return to the Metal Gear Solid genre that Kojima essentially created.
Kojima has always been an auteur who actively treats the boundaries between mediums as a personal challenge.
Totally. He has this notorious habit of posting social media photos with Hollywood actors, which seemingly confirms this highly credible leak about a star-studded A-list cast for the game. But he, in partnership with Sony Interactive Entertainment, is billing Pheasant as a next-generation interactive movie.
Yes, that's the phrase they're using.
I struggle with that phrase, though. We have had cinematic games for over a decade. What actually elevates this from a video game with long cutscenes into an actual interactive movie?
It comes down to the staggering processing power required to pull off sandbox performance capture.
Sandbox performance capture.
Yeah. Think about a highly cinematic linear game. The most emotional, performance-heavy scenes happen in carefully controlled digital environments. The developer knows exactly where the player will be standing.
Right, they dictate exactly where the light source is to catch the tear on a character's cheek.
Exactly. The lighting and the camera angles are baked into the code. The developer acts as the cinematographer. But Kojima is building an action espionage sandbox.
You control the camera.
You control the camera, the time of day, the approach. You might trigger a deeply complex emotional interaction with an A-list actor at high noon or in the pitch black of a rainstorm. Calculating the dynamic lighting against the subtle micro-expressions of a human face, doing that in real time without it looking like a creepy, uncanny valley mannequin, the processing overhead is monumental.
Wow. So they aren't just motion capturing an actor's body. They are essentially simulating the physics of a live-action film set inside a world where the player is constantly changing the variables.
Precisely. They are expected to push the absolute boundaries of the PlayStation 5 hardware and potentially even the PS6. For anyone fascinated by the intersection of cinema and interactive media, this is the ultimate case study in how far the medium can be pushed.
It's incredible. But it highlights this fascinating dichotomy, because while Kojima is building a brand new IP with a blank check, PlayStation's other major studios are trying to figure out what to do with their oldest, most legendary characters.
You are referring to Santa Monica Studio and the burden of legacy.
I am. The rumors surrounding the next God of War reveal are reaching a fever pitch, with the summer showcase season approaching in late May and June.
The silence from the studio has been deafening.
It really has. I mean, following Ragnarok and the incredibly definitive Valhalla DLC, where does the franchise even go? It's a ship of Theseus problem.
Right, the philosophical paradox.
Yeah. Are we just going to keep dragging Kratos into new mythologies forever? Like, oh, now Kratos is in ancient Egypt. Or now he's dealing with Celtic lore. Or is it finally time for Atreus to take the lead on his solo journey to find the giants?
It is the ultimate tightrope walk of franchise fatigue versus reinvention. And Santa Monica Studio is acutely aware of that paradox. God of War is Sony's golden goose.
They can't just let it end.
No, even a simple CGI teaser would break the internet. But the transition of power is so delicate. While industry insiders hint at a brand new IP led by Corey Barlog, God of War has to continue. But if they pivot entirely to Atreus, they risk alienating the core demographic that buys the game specifically for Kratos.
Because the mechanics are so different.
Completely. Atreus's combat loop is faster, lighter, more projectile-based. It requires a total recalibration of the game's physics. The studio has to calculate whether the brand loyalty is attached to the title on the box or to the specific visceral weight of Kratos's Leviathan axe in your hands.
So for you listening, it's worth asking yourself, what do you actually want to see from a legacy franchise? Do you want a familiar comfort, even if it forces the story to just walk in circles? Or do you want a bold new direction? Because while studios like Santa Monica are agonizing over how to iterate on their official lore, sometimes the fans themselves do a better job of iterating on classic games.
Which inevitably leads us to a very messy legal collision.
Right. Passion versus piracy. Mm. We need to talk about the fall of Turtle YW. It's honestly heartbreaking. According to the iGaming piece, Blizzard Entertainment just shut down this beloved World of Warcraft fan server. Tens of thousands of players just lost years of progress and community.
Yeah, they issued a cease and desist.
And what makes this so frustrating is that the volunteer devs didn't just copy the game. It was a classic plus server. They used vanilla WoW as a foundation, but they added custom zones, new playable races like high elves and goblins, and entirely unique quests.
It was a massive undertaking.
It's like fans writing a sequel to your favorite book that the original author refused to write, only for the publisher to come in and burn all the copies.
This raises an important question, though. And understand the shutdown, we have to look impartially at the legal mechanics at play here. Because on one hand, the community widely respected Turtle WoW for keeping the spirit of vanilla alive.
Right.
But on the other hand, Blizzard is entirely within its legal right to protect its IP, especially since they offer their own season of discovery and official classic servers. It comes down to trademark dilution under the Lanham Act.
Wait, so it isn't just about Blizzard being a greedy corporation wanting to crush a free alternative?
Not at all. In the United States, trademark law requires the owner of a mark to actively police and protect it. If Blizzard turns a blind eye to a massive, highly publicized custom server using their proprietary character models and lore, they aren't just being lenient. In the eyes of the law, they are establishing a precedent of abandonment.
Meaning what? If they don't sue the fans, they lose the game.
Essentially, yes. If they allow an unlicensed competitor to operate without issuing a cease and desist, a future malicious corporate competitor could use that precedent to argue that Blizzard forfeited their exclusive right to the IP. They literally have to send the lawyers to shut down Turtle WoW to maintain their legal ownership of the Warcraft franchise.
Wow. That is the brutal reality of copyright.
Yeah.
Because community passion is such a powerful engine. I mean, just look at the Temtem, Pioneer's Kickstarter, smashing all its goals this month. That proves how powerful community backing can be when it's official.
Exactly.
But with WoW, that exact same enthusiasm just hits a legal brick wall.
It creates a deeply uncomfortable tension. And for you listening, think about your own experiences with community-driven projects. Is emulation simply piracy? Or is it vital game preservation when developers move on?
It's a tough call. So what does this all mean? We have covered a massive amount of ground on this deep dive.
I really have.
From Epic Games physically manipulating the very map you play on to tell a story, to Sony streaming your wallet's access to indie games, we've looked at Kojima blurring Hollywood in gaming, the looming shadow of Kratos, and, of course, the tragic end of a fan-made WoWtopia.
And it leaves us with something really important to ponder. Today, we talked about the power of developers to change maps, update storefronts, and legally erase private servers.
Yeah.
It begs the question, in this modern era of purely digital live service ecosystems, do you actually own your video games anymore, or are you just renting a temporary license to someone else's digital theme park?
A digital theme park that can close its gates the moment the tectonic plates shift. That is a heavy but vital concept to consider. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the digital worlds you inhabit, and we will see you next time.